Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I'm joined by Graham Nichols and Mark Ventham, both pastors of Christ Church, Haywards Heath. In this episode, we talk about being same-sex attracted as a Christian, the challenges, the positive impact of a church family, and how, as churches, we can be even better at loving those in our congregations who are same-sex attracted. And we have a brilliant special guest to help us out.
Hi, I'm Mark Ventham.
Hello, my name's Graham Nichols.
And I'm Josh Bannister, and you're listening to...
Ordinary! Season 2.
Season 2, Episode 3. I believe.
Yeah.
And we're very happy today to have a friend and guest with us in the studio by the name of Sam James. Say hello, Sam.
Hello.
Welcome. How are you today?
Ecstatic.
Oh, brilliant.
He's been upgraded to friend.
Yeah.
Friend. I thought you were just an acquaintance.
It's the big leagues.
Oh, I'll call him friend. I was at Sam James's house for New Year this year, so he's definitely a friend to me. It was a brilliant, brilliant
experience. What games
did you play? Quite a lot of games. My favourite game was the Let's Dance.
Oh, the dancing game. Oh, yeah.
What is that?
Absolutely loved it.
Basically, you pretend to sort of dance in front of an Xbox.
Pretend? I wasn't pretending. That was my best dancing.
I don't know.
And I hear it was some firework display.
Oh, it was epic.
Epic.
It was dangerous, if anything.
Dangerous, yeah. Exciting.
Who did it? You.
Me, yeah.
Sam James.
Oh, nice one.
In the garden.
Don't do anything by half measures. It's got to be,
were you fulfilling the recommended required meterage distance?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Really?
I think the measuring might have been slightly out, perhaps.
Yeah.
But the neighbours liked it, at least.
They
anyway.
Loved it. It was like cheers all around. Yeah. It was crazy.
But why are we talking with Sam James?
Well, that's a good question. Do you want to give us some background?
Well, he's got a testimony to share, which we think might be helpful to other people listening who might have some of the same challenges. So we're just going to get straight into it, really, and get him to talk a little bit.
Sam
about...
is a member of the church with us here, have been for a while now, but we love having Sam. It's great to have him with us this morning. Sam, just start telling us a little bit about your story. It'd be great to...
Yeah.
Tell us what you do first. Let's talk about what you do.
Yeah, so...
Because you have an exciting job.
All right, fair enough.
We spend a lot of time talking about it because I love it.
Yeah, unfortunately, sometimes it's kind of a blessing and a curse sometimes because it's all anyone wants to talk to me about. But yeah. So I'm 29. I'm a pilot, particularly a captain for a UK airline. It's kind of what brought me to Haywards Heath the first time around back in 2012. But... yeah, I've been doing that for nearly 10 years now. Prior to that, I was pretty much a student, really, and just at school before that.
Back to the childhood and growing up, what kind of situation was that in?
So it was a bit of a mixed kind of bag. Grew up with a single-parent family, with a mum. Loved her to bits. We had a really good, close relationship. But dad was never around. He kind of ran off when I was born. So it was really just me and her. And for the first 10 years, grew up in Great Yarmouth in Norfolk, then moved to be close to my grandmother, who was a Christian, when I was about 10 or 11.
But your mum wasn't?
But my mum wasn't explicitly a Christian, not at that point. She did later on become a Christian later on. But obviously growing up as a sort of a teenager, eventually I kind of sort of, I was growing up sort of with a sort of church background, not explicitly, but I experienced the sort of love from a church family that I experienced with my nan and sort of that sort of environment, which was really nice. And I think that was certainly encouraging. And I think I'd always sensed that I believed in God even from a very young age. I sensed God's presence. It made sense basically to me. So then growing up, I kind of worked out, well, how am I going to work this out? How am I going to realize this? And so when I was 15, I did actually become a Christian, and I was baptized and I committed myself to Jesus. But at the same time, I also discovered that I was having, same-sex attraction. I was having feelings for people of the same sex. And obviously that was really hard for anyone, but particularly as a Christian, particularly as a conservative, evangelical Christian. And my church that I was going to, both in Baldock, but I'd say even Haywards Heath as well, were both very warm and loving churches, but it was still a very daunting thing to tell someone you know, let alone in culture, but actually in the church setting, it was really daunting to try and tell someone that I was struggling with that. So I kind of kept that sort of secret a little bit. I kind of sort of lived a double life for about 5-6 years to the age of about...
Between 15 and 20.
15 and 20, yeah. And so I was kind of sort of thinking, well, I want to be a Christian, and I was trying to work out, well, how do I make this work? You know, I was Googling stuff because I didn't want to ask anyone because it was embarrassing and all this sort of, it was a real wrestle. So I was kind of living sort of a bit of a double life, trying to sort of explore that side of my identity, so to speak, but then also I kind of wanting to keep my Christian identity because that was so important as well. I'm trying to reconcile the two. And I think by the time I was 19 and 20, I'd asked enough questions, I became brave enough to really kind of tell the pastor at the church I was going to, really, really godly man, really lovely guy, and actually I had some conversations with my grandmother about it as well. She was also a very godly woman and also a very lovely woman as well, and so I had a lot of support in that respect. But
Was your mum still around at this point?
Yeah, so during that period when I was 18, I lost my mum. She died through cancer, but she did become a Christian beforehand. And I think that was a real encouragement to me. And I think that perhaps kind of made me realise, kind of sort of made me think about what's more important, you know, what's the big picture, yeah. You know, what is the point of life? Those big questions, it kind of really refocused me a little bit more. And so I think around about 18, 19 years onwards, I kind of realised that I was feeling like it was sort of an emotional and spiritual tug of war. I was just sort of, there was two angles I was being pulled in, and it was really exhausting, and I didn't want to keep doing that. I wanted to, for me, integrity was really key about my faith, and I didn't want to just pick and choose and go, oh, you know, I'm going to ignore the bit of the Bible that says, you know, very explicitly that's, you know, sex is purely to be within a marriage between a man and a woman. It's quite clear on that. I was happy that that was the case. So it was just then reconciling, how do I fit that with my life? Mm.
And where did you begin to get, you know, how did you begin to get support and cared for and loved and helped in this? At the same time, you presumably, you know, career is, you're traveling across the world to train to be a pilot. Was it in New Zealand? A year there? And
well, exactly. I mean, actually, when I did go off to do my training, I was only 19, so I was still, you know, I was still growing up, really, still very young. And so I think my faith kind of took a bit of a, unfortunately, it took a bit of a backseat whilst I was kind of away doing that. And I wasn't really immersed in, and I wasn't surrounded by really godly people who could be an encouragement in that respect. But I think things started to sort of improve a little bit when I came home, and I sort of, when I started working for my first airline, which got me based at Gatwick. That's where I first met you guys, actually. Back in 2012.
Is it that long ago?
I know. Wow. Can you believe it?
Time flies.
At Gatwick Airport, you met.
Not at Gatwick.
Well, we didn't meet at Gatwick Airport. That'd
I seem
be a bit
to
weird.
Remember you talking to us about the same-sex attraction fairly early on.
Yeah.
Not like a year after you've been coming.
But at that point, you'd already spoken to your previous pastor.
I'd already spoken to a previous pastor. I'd already spoken to some other friends about it. And I think it was just something that I was becoming a lot more just confident about anyway. I was able to speak about it. Yeah, I wasn't feeling too, you know, I was just like, you know, let's talk about it. It's, yeah. And actually, thankfully, I come from a sort of family where we've always had that freedom to talk about stuff, you know, that might be a bit awkward, but we just do it.
Yeah.
It's been really helpful. So I think in that respect, I felt, yeah, sort of this time around coming to sort of meet a new church, I didn't want to paint a fake picture. I wanted to be authentic. And actually, I must admit, actually, there were other slightly more amusing benefits to doing this, because sometimes, well, it didn't happen too often. I can't say I'm much of a Casanova. But there was a couple of girls who showed interest, and it was very awkward trying to turn them down. And just going, oh, I think you're really, you know, I think you're... looking in the wrong direction. So I didn't want to embarrass anyone because of that.
No.
So it was kind of purely, it was sort of, you know, good motives.
Because and when you say open, actually, we have a membership here at Christchurch, and actually as part of your membership interview to the church, you spoke of your struggles and same-sex attraction. So right from the ghetto, in terms of the whole church, it's fair to say is aware.
Yeah, exactly.
In that, I mean, how did, was that That sounds to me quite a big thing, because often in membership interviews we're not really talking about our struggles or the heart. So like, you know, we're as leaders kind of thinking, wow, you know, like admiring the fact that you are wanting to be open and transparent and in this way, and wanting for us all to be like that. But I mean, talk us through how that was in terms of how did you find the reception? How was the church family as they responded to this? How did you feel about it?
And it doesn't all have to be, it was amazing, it was amazing. You can be honest.
Well, I think I'd already gone through the sort of heart-wrenching kind of emotional roller coaster early on. And so actually I think getting to know my sort of new, at the time, my new church family, and then obviously when I came back after I'd gone away for a couple of years and then obviously come back in 2016, and I've been here since then. But actually the church has been really good. It's just really lovely people who are, you know, even though, yeah, we're a conservative, even church, we hold to the sort of biblical view of marriage, that doesn't necessarily mean that people are going to treat you in a negative way. And actually I saw that. I was confident that I could tell the church without that fear of reprisal or fear of judgment or fear of just what my people might think, you know. I think generally in a good sort of solid church, I think people will understand that we're all broken, we're all messed up, and this particular struggle that I have doesn't make me any more messed up than anyone else. But it's something that perhaps is a bit more outwardly. There's obviously a lot more knock-on effects, you know. So it's little things like, you know, knowing that, you know, you probably might not get married, you might not have children, you might not have the, you know, the sort of idealistic family, you know, like the sort of tick box of how to do life. But actually you find life sort of more fulfilled in other ways, you know, by serving the life of the church and by experiencing family within the church, rather than in a nuclear setting.
In that sense, I think initially it might seem like the biggest challenge, the biggest hurdle might be that first time you speak to a pastor about it or start being open with people. But then I guess it doesn't then suddenly become easy, like, as in there's still other challenges, like the idea of maybe not getting married or so how after you'd kind of joined Christchurch again and you felt that everybody was kind of open and you didn't feel judged, or, you know, you had good relationships with people, it doesn't just become simple then, right?
No, it's not like, oh, it's a walk in the park, oh, I'm fixed now. No, it's,
so
it's...
what are the challenges that still remain after that?
I think it's accountability, you know. I think myself, like probably many other men and women to some extent, but particularly men, you know, we struggle with heart, lust issues, what we do in our private lives and our private times. Mm-hmm. And so I think having good accountability is really good, really important for that. And obviously me and Mark obviously meet up for coffee almost every week, and we, you know, he asks me the questions I don't want to be asked. Mm-hmm.
We study the Bible.
I particularly enjoy that. But it's a real encouragement. I think it's that real encouragement, I think, that every week, you know, going to church, meeting with God's people, it's a means, exercising those means of grace really helps all of us to live more strongly for Christ. And I think as a same-sex attracted Christian, I think it's the battle is particularly hard because you might not necessarily have a wife or someone who's there to kind of be an encouragement and remind you. But then actually what I try to remind myself is that actually there are single people who are heterosexual, and you know, it's slightly different because they might necessarily have the hope of being married one day, but actually marriage is not the end goal. You know, ultimately, if we're Christians, we know that we're going to heaven, we're going to be in the new heavens and the new earth, and actually, you know, that's really what the big goal is at the end of the day. And so my life, it's reminding myself, sometimes I might get a bit frustrated, so even though I'm saying this now, I'll tell you, like, in a few weeks, I'll probably forget this, and I'll probably think, oh, I wish I was married, or I wish, you know, life was different. But
is it also a challenge?
It's up and down. It's not always just... Yes.
Someone else mentioned to me that for guys, same-sex attracted guys, because you don't have the balance of a woman and a different kind of process, the whole kind of moving to sexual intimacy process is rapid for guys, because it's much more of a hookup culture. I know in heterosexual it's become quite a hookup culture these days, but less so, particularly because women go at different speeds, whereas men kind of have an instant attraction and go for it more. And apparently, you know, that's in the sort of same-sex culture.
It's in the ways in the gay lifestyle, yeah.
Yeah, which is very quick. So it means the sort of route from sort of lust, temptation to sin is rapid.
Very quick, yeah.
And so, you know, the fall can be quick. And that is a challenge, just something to remember. Is that fair to say?
Oh, completely. And yeah. I think, I think it would be very fair to say that I've sort of perhaps maybe experienced some of that, maybe not all of that, but I certainly know that, I know what it feels like. And I think I was thinking earlier as well, actually, there's some really good godly Christian leaders who are same-sex attracted. And obviously, if anyone's wondering why I'm using this really clunky term, it's there is, I do want to just quickly, if I can quickly highlight that actually,
sure, the reason why we're,
is that, I think many who have heard this term, it's predominantly because I don't necessarily, I identify as gay because that's not my primary identity. And many Christians would also say the same. I don't have an issue with Christians who say that they're gay, but I kind of want to distinguish the fact that actually that's not my identity. My identity is in Christ, and it's sort of more of a struggle and something that I have to, it's sort of something I wrestle with, but it's not necessarily something that defines me.
Yes.
So that's really just why I'm saying SSA.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Same-sex attracted. So just in case anyone's curious.
Yeah, and also we don't tend to say, we might say I'm a husband, I'm a father, I'm a pastor, I'm a pilot. We don't tend to say, and I'm a heterosexual.
No.
So exactly, by saying I'm gay as a sort of primary identifier, it's not only pushing Christ out, but it's also pushing out the rest of life and the other things that are part of who we are.
But it's interesting because going back to what you were saying about the sort of particularly the gay lifestyle, actually, people do like to identify that as a big primary identity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
That's a good question.
Is it a sense of solidarity or something like that? Or?
I think it is. I think it's maybe sort of like a tribe. You know, these are my people. This is my tribe, and this is what I belong to. We all feel like we all want to feel like we belong somewhere, and I think particularly growing up as a gay person, I think even in schools nowadays, it can feel very lonely, very isolating. You know, I mean, I struggled because I wasn't really particularly sporty, but there was never really any particular crowd that I got on with. So it was quite isolating. So when I was like kind of 15, 16 and there was a tribe and I thought, oh, these are my people.
Yeah.
You know, I felt you feel part of something.
Yeah.
It's not very satisfying sometimes. I think it's not particularly nice sometimes tribe to be part of, but it's something. Yeah.
What are some of the things that, foolish things that sometimes people say to you as Christians? There could be people in our church, but just kind of like, you know, clunky bad things. Like they make inappropriate jokes, or they just say, it's easy for you or something, I don't know.
Well, I recently got asked whether I was seeing anyone, and that obviously leads to an awkward question going, no. And they kept pushing the question, and I was like, no. Surely, you know, you've got her eye on her. And I'm like, no. and it's things where people sort of assume that that's, you know, kind of think, oh, I imagine people saying, well, you know, you're still single. But thankfully, I think that's why I want to be open with people, so I didn't have this awkwardness. And actually, that's been really helpful. I think sometimes, which I find a little bit frustrating, but I try and have a little bit of grace with, is sometimes, you know, if you hear people sort of saying, like sort of talking about marriage and that sort of thing, that can be a real struggle sometimes.
Yes.
You know, I think sort of weddings and you sort of have that reminder that, you know, I kind of want to be joyful for the person that's getting married, and I am joyful for them, but on the same time, there is that little bit of sort of self, I don't know, not self-pity, but it's
a reminder.
It's a little reminder that, you know, you know, you can't have that.
It's similar for people who can't have, so I don't want to say it's all right, but it's similar for people who can't have children. There is a mixed feeling, I know, from people who can't have children when their sort of best friends have children. They're both joyful and also slightly, it's a tinge of kind of bitterness about
bitterness.
It that they're to deal with.
Bittersweet.
And that's part of being a church family, well, isn't it? Rejoicing with those who rejoice, but mourning with those who mourn as well. And recognizing one of being sensitive to one another's struggles in that sense of loving one another well.
Were you going to ask some church family questions? Can I ask
a question before we get
to it? Of course.
Just might be, maybe it's a hard question, I'm not sure. But given that same-sex attraction is such a, contentious point around the kind of Christian ideology and how non-Christians view Christianity. It's one of those, like, it's one of the main central points of, like, but what about, you say people can't be gay or whatever. Mm-hmm. Do you find, as someone who is same-sex attracted, that you have difficult conversations with other people who are also same-sex attracted who might say, but how can you be a Christian when you're same-sex attracted? That doesn't make sense, because don't Christians hate gay people and things like that? Do you find that, have you ever had conversations like that, or is that just not...
I think so. I've had... It's a weird mix. I have got quite a lot of friends. I mean, I've spoken to colleagues at work as well about it.
Okay.
I'm quite open at work as well. It's, you know, if it comes up in conversation, I don't just come blurting it out. But you know...
You've got to do something in the gothic for 3 or 4 hours when you're sitting there.
You end up talking about a lot of things and you end up getting into some quite deep conversation sometimes. So it's been quite good fun. But yeah, sometimes, you know, I've got quite a few gay friends, you know, who aren't Christians, and actually they...
How do they feel about that then?
I think the people that know me well are, you know, they're my friends. They care for me, even though they're not Christians, they're not believers, and they might not know how to care for me, perhaps, or encourage me in a Christian element perspective. They're actually still very loving and actually kind of very happy to have those conversations. I think where those potential awkward conversations come up with people who don't actually necessarily know me that well, and if their conversation gets to that, you know, often people say, oh, why do you bother? Just, oh, you know, isn't it just not, it's not worth it. You know, just, you should just give up. And, you know, and it's because they don't really understand, you know, the gospel. They don't really understand what I'm giving, you know, why I'm giving this up, why I'm saying no to part of myself.
Sure.
I think sometimes we all have to say no to part of ourselves. You know, it's not just me, you know, it's not just,
absolutely.
You know, we all have to, you know, say no to some aspects of our lives.
Absolutely.
Which are wrong.
And I think that's a helpful thing, because I remember reading Ed Shaw's book, The Plausibility... what's it called?
Plausibility Problem.
Really good book.
And what's helpful in one sense is this would be your struggle, but we all have struggles which we actually are having to resist. And actually often what can be helpful is talking about our own struggles as well, that we're not just making this is the one big, you know, issue that, you know, is 10 times worse than anything else. But actually, if we're all being real and open in this way, actually, it's encouraging for you. And that's partly when we're talking in our one-to-one. It's not all about accountability of same-sex attraction struggle, but actually just the wider Christian life as well. You know, how are we going on spiritually in those ways as well?
Because I guess if you were to just hyper-focus in on that one thing in anybody's life, just that one sin, you would then, that would be to the detriment of your other... issues or your development. It's just not helpful, is it?
It's partly us capitulating to culture, which is the weird thing, which is, you know, people have written well, actually, kind of looking, tracing from the romantic novels through to now, that actually part of the problem with the sort of sexual revolution and the cross-sexual revolution and the homosexual revolution is all to do with the romanticising and the idolising of sex and romance and love. Mm. A particular kind of romantic love. You know, obviously love is a good thing, but it's all kind of flowed through to that. So sometimes we as Christians, although we're saying, yes, it needs to be within marriage, we idolise romantic love and we idolise sex. We just confine it within. So we say there's this massive God called sex. You can only have it in marriage, but it's a massive God, which I think is helpful to kind of rein back from that and say, well, that's not really how the Bible views it. You know, it's part of, you know, the enrichment of life. So it's a good thing.
But it's not essential.
No, and it's not it's not up there as God, because there's only one. Yeah. So I think that you suffer in a way from the heterosexual revolution, which you can kind of trace the roots of a lot of the homosexual revolution in the heterosexual revolution, interestingly. Anyway, that's a little bit of cultural analysis for you.
But I mean,
my little nerdy moment.
But just quickly going into culture, though, it is unfortunately that like this particular issue is hard, because actually most of the world, particularly in the Western world, actually encourages and promotes really sort of.
And I imagine, particularly within the workplace environment that you are in as well, that's promoted even more so.
Particularly so. I say promoted, but it's celebrated. I wouldn't say encouraged, that's probably the wrong word to use, but it's certainly not discouraged. It's you know, there's a lot of freedom actually in that respect.
Yeah.
And helpful as well, because, you know, often there's, you know, lots of night stops and you know, some of this, I mean, to be honest, you have to look in the Sun or some of the tabloids and you can see some of the stuff that goes on. So I think it's just being a really good witness in that particular circumstance. But also, it's just other people, you know, sort of just particularly not, you know, just not particularly encouraging in that respect.
We're kind of running out of time. It's been really helpful. Just in a kind of last couple of minutes or so, tell us, what are some of the things that the church has done well, and what are some of the things the church could do a lot better?
So I think it's interesting when you say the church. I mean, I guess
as in let's talk Christchurch. We know.
So locally,
yeah. Just get down to it.
The church, what do we do there? Well, and what do you find helpful? You know.
So I think hospitality, I think, is a real good thing. That's something that really makes you feel part of the family, you know, the big family. Having you over for meals, particularly when I first moved here and was getting new to the area, that was really great. You know, I wasn't alone on a Sunday, and just getting to know people, having people over, talking to people about just life, really, involving people, and you know, even was invited over for Christmas this year as well. Just gone by one of the pastors as well. His lovely family. It was very, very nice indeed. But that made me feel part of the family, and that was a real encouragement. That was a real show of love, and I think that's something that the church is doing better and better. I think particularly our church is doing a really nice job of. It's not perfect, you know, and sometimes we don't get it right sometimes, but I think in the main that's a real good way of supporting people.
And what would you like us to do better?
I think just perhaps looking out for us. I say looking out for us, but it's just having that better understanding of sort of getting into what it feels like, having that sort of that mental perspective of the daily wrestles and that sort of that perhaps isolating sort of loneliness that you can feel.
Would you like someone asking you about that, say on a Sunday morning, you know, you got your coffee in hand and you want someone to say, so what are your struggles?
I think, do you know what?
You wouldn't mind?
I, one thing that I often joke about is that, you know, often people ask me, you know, where have I been flying to, yes, or about work? And, you know, don't get me wrong, I love my job. I do love my job. But, you know, I can only talk about it for so many hours of the day. And actually, I would find it way more refreshing if somebody came up to me and asked me something completely, like, random, like, you know, how's your prayer life? Yeah. How's your home life? You know, how are the cats? How's life? You know, like real life, not sort of superficial, polite British conversation, but just ask me something deep. You know, I think we could all benefit from that. You know, how's the sermon challenged you? You know,
don't come to our church gathering on this Sunday, because you're going to have 20 people lining up to ask you something deep. Obviously, the Sunday
after. You'll have to come back on the podcast in a couple of months and just be like, cancel.
Okay,
that.
Right, that was a bad idea.
Well, I mean, it's great. I mean, in one sense,
let's
want to encourage everyone to be doing
completely.
Hey, come on, that's these are the kind of things that we want to be talking about as a church.
Let's be more real. Yeah, let's be more real with one another.
At the end of the day, this is who we are. We are a family. We love each other, and actually, we've got to be talking about our struggles and our vulnerabilities. And actually, I think what you have done has been a great example to the church family of saying, actually, you know, this is where I've struggled. Please help me. Pray for me. Care for me. Love me. And actually, the rest of the church family need to be doing the same. This is my area of weakness. Help me.
Well, it's been really good talking to you, Sam.
Thank you.
And
amazing.
What would be great if any of our listeners want to email in any questions, ordinary@cchh.org.uk, or perhaps comments, perhaps you've had a similar experience, or perhaps you know someone who has, or perhaps you're just intrigued and want to ask any more.
Or even questions to Sam, we could pass those.
Absolutely.
And can I, just before we finish as well, also just really recommend, I think it was a shame that these guys weren't necessarily around when I was a teenager, if I was just 10 years too late, but there was a couple of names like Sam Albury, Ed Shaw, Wesley Hill. All of them have written really good stuff on same-sex attraction. They all struggle with it themselves, really godly men.
And the Living Out website?
Living Out website, really, really helpful. Just there's some great videos on there about people, you know, I'm not special, I'm, you know, there's loads of people that go through the exact struggles as me, even maybe inside our own church as well. So,
and you say if you're struggling, talk with someone.
Definitely, as I said, you know, if you go to a church where they love Jesus and the Bible is taught faithfully, I think take that little leap and have that little bit of courage and trust. Basically, just tell someone that you really trust, someone you trust, someone you love, and you can confide in. And I think it will be a real encouragement. I think it's a real blessing, I think, just to sort of share each other's burdens in that respect.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Ordinary. If you do have comments or questions following this episode, then, as Graham said, feel free to email us and we'd love to talk to you.
Join us again next week for an episode of Ordinary Apologetics, when we're going to be talking about the problem of evil and suffering. See you next time.